everybody. I'm Amber Rose, the religious hippie, and I host the podcast A Catholic's Perspective. Join me every 2 weeks as I release episodes targeted towards helping young Catholics navigate their ever-changing secular world while staying strong in their faith. Whether you are a Catholic or not, all are welcome here. So if this is something that interests you, feel free to tune in. You can find A Catholic's Perspective on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I hope to see you there. Bye!
Life is a quest for logic and reason. It is a quest to find balance between science and faith. Life is a quest for knowledge and understanding. But most importantly, it's a quest for personal discovery. Whatever your quest, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Welcome to Quest. Hi everyone, I'm your host, Todd Fisher. I'm the founder of Metatomics, and I'm on a never-ending quest for knowledge. A quest is a search for something, and this podcast will show you how we know what we know through interviews with people that have incredible stories of dedication and perseverance. To me, curiosity is part of what makes us human, and there's still so much we don't know. I believe there's joy in discovery. It's what drives us. It's our quest. And with that, welcome to Season 4 of the Quest Podcast. I hope you enjoy this next interview. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the Quest Podcast.
Hi, how are you?
I caught you right mid-drink, right when I introduced you. I was like, wow.
Of course I would drink coffee then. It's okay. That is the real Maria. So
that's the real Maria.
Reality. Yeah, always a coffee.
Well, I've got my coffee here too, so you know, you'll probably catch me mid-drink in a second. I'm happy you could take the time today. We've chatted a little bit in the past, and I think you're a really fascinating person.
Thank you.
UK fan, just like me, so we have that in common.
Absolutely, BDN is a tight-knit community for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm trying to get more UK fans to go tune into the Quest Podcast. So, it's a good means.
That's great. We can tag team that one together.
I've got to start to poach some of Matt Jones's fans over to mine. What do you think?
they have a fandom. That is for sure.
They have a rabid fan base. So yes. Interesting. But I'm glad that you were able to come on. There's so much I want to ask you about today. But what we're going to do is let's just kind of jump off here. You know, tell me about your early life and how you grew up. Did you always dream of doing pageants?
So I always dreamed of modeling. I saw pageants as the way to get to that end goal for sure. I grew up in a small town called Danville, Kentucky, and it was a fantastic place to grow up for sure. I loved growing up there. It's just a really sweet community. But so while growing up there, the modeling world, of course, is not vastly common in small town Kentucky. Yeah. And so I knew I wanted to do it, but I didn't know how to get to that end goal. And then I started hearing of pageantry, of course. I've watched Miss USA since I can remember on TV. But then when I was about 15 or so, I decided to compete in my first pageant. And I just did a handful. I wasn't ever like a serial pageant girl like some are.
Yeah.
But I learned a whole lot for sure and made great friendships and great connections. And within 1 year, I won 3 state titles for Kentucky, including Miss Kentucky that goes to Miss USA.
Yeah.
And very, very long story short, after placing as a runner-up at Miss USA, I came back and that's when I decided to take modeling serious. I kind of felt like it was now or never, and why not? What's there to lose? Someone just going to tell me no is the worst situation here.
Sure.
And then it turned into a full-time job after a year of developing my portfolio and kind of getting out there. And now I have been doing, I've been modeling and working in TV for 14 years for a living.
Wow. So, that's great.
Yeah. So grateful. I never really thought it would turn into a full career like this. So
how small of a town did you grow up in?
Oh, there's about 30,000 people. It's not, as small as some, but it's the county seat. So the towns all within it are very, very tiny.
Yeah.
Outside of Danville too. And so it's just a really tight knit community. And a lot of that population is Center College too.
Right.
So
right.
Pretty small, but yeah, I graduated with a class of a little over 200 people.
Gotcha.
In my high school. So if that gives you any kind of idea.
Yeah. Did you grow up spiritual or religious?
Yeah, I did. I grew up in a really great kind of open family. I wasn't really none. I'm one of three kids. I'm the middle child syndrome is real. And none of us were ever forced into church by any means, which I thought was a great way to attack that because they led by example. My parents definitely grew up in church as well. But it wasn't ever anything that was incredibly forced upon us. The method was shown, but we were able to really choose our own ways. And by finding a really great youth group whenever I guess I was in middle school or so, was how I was able to really kind of develop my own relationship and my own beliefs. And then it kind of took light of its own for sure. And it didn't need anyone to push us to go that direction. And my siblings were pretty much the same story.
I'm always curious about that because you and I were in the heart of the Bible Belt. I mean, that's where we grew up, so it's around everywhere. There's church on every street corner in some of these towns. And so I'm always curious when people move into entertainment, if that core of religion helps them when they get, because it almost seems like it's in conflict in a way. I want to jump in. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, so yeah, it can be for sure. It can be in conflict. It just, depends. And I've definitely seen that stereotype whenever I'm in the modeling world, which is, towns outside of cities outside of Kentucky for sure. That they assume it is much different than what it is, and sometimes assume Christians are much different than what they are. So I'm excited to
That's
kind of
true.
prove them wrong that we're not always just sitting back judgy and rude.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to take this next section right from your bio on your website. So you write on your biography that beginning at age 15, you began your run for the title of Miss Boyle County Fair. And after several frustrating placements as first runner-up, falling just short of your goal, that you finally captured the treasured title and took home your hometown crown. So what I'm curious about, because you did this when you were very young, how did you overcome the disappointment? Because I want to know what makes perseverance.
Yeah, that's a
Because
great question.
clearly you had to have that,
Yeah, but that's a great question. And it's really mind-blowing. Like there's several girls that I coach now, like the current Miss Indiana USA. She's at Miss USA right now. She just went and registered. But anyway, she tried seven times for the state pageant. So like there are some girls that just really, had their heart set. And I was definitely one of those. I think to me it was pageants are different because it's not black and white at all. I remember my parents would always say, like, can't you play a sport where you either score or you don't score when you have some kind of idea of how well you're doing? And that's definitely not pageantry at all because it can be very opinion-based and it can be, of course, it's dependent on the judges. I mean, there are girls that do well consistently for sure. And there are tricks to the trade by all means, just like anything else, but it is definitely not black and white. So I guess knowing that brought me back because it's just depends on like what judges you get. But more so, I really didn't know what I was doing at all. And I just did a couple at the most a year or so at that point until I was a little bit older. And so it was just like kind of like why not? It was always that end goal. And then I just kept learning. And every time that I competed, I learned kind of what I didn't do right. And then it was just so I was so eager to show what I had learned by the following year. And so I finally, by the time that I did win, it was even more meaningful. And it just shows, like God has his timing because it was my senior year of high school and it was the biggest the pageant had ever been. And that led me to what is called Miss Kentucky County Fair. And to people not in Kentucky, that sounds as podunk redneck as it comes. But it is an absolutely beautiful state pageant in January. Has really nothing to do with the state fair. It's a 100-foot long runway. With lights down at the Galt House in Louisville. But anyways, I won that where there's 93 contestants, so representatives of all over the state. And that was really, like I said, when I decided to take it more serious. And so each little step, even if I was first runner up or once I won state, it gave me a little bit more faith to go to the next. And then of course, just more knowledge. A lot of these girls that I was competing with grew up doing this and I had no idea what I was doing at all. Not in the slightest. So it was just almost like the I'm a really determined person. And whenever I would set my mind to something, I definitely would it, made me more determined even if I did fail to achieve that.
Perseverance, I think, is an important word that people aren't embracing enough because I see far too many people that just they quit after the first try. And that's, and it's disheartening. You know, they get their heart broken and they're just like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it leaves a bad taste in their mouth rather than try again. You know, no one's expecting you to pick up the baseball bat and hit the first time. No one's expecting your first painting to be the greatest one. Your first piece of music might not be your greatest work, and you have to stick with things. And I think that's lost on people these days.
Yeah. And even more so, it just means more once you have tried that long. Like, there's a lot of girls who compete for Miss Kentucky or whatnot. And like the first time I competed for Miss Kentucky USA, to be transparent, I did win on my first time, but I had been competing in other pageants for years. Yeah. And there's some girls that will jump in on their first pageant and be so bummed that they didn't win, or maybe their first attempt at a modeling contract or something like that. And they're just so heartbroken that it didn't work out. But in reality, whenever it does work out, like I said, for that girl, her name is Sammy, who just won, who's the current Miss Indiana USA. Like, the fact that was her seventh time, that it just means so much more once in anything that you do that you've tried so long for it.
Let's dig into
always timing. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's dig into the Miss USA stuff real quick. So you were Miss Kentucky USA in 2009. Is that right?
Yes. Correct.
And then you were in the top five for Miss USA overall. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So for people that don't understand this world, how is Miss USA different than Miss America?
Great question. So they're both really great, equally great organizations. Whenever I did Miss USA, it was the one that's owned by Donald Trump. That's how most people separate them.
That was my next question, actually, if those were the Trump years.
They were. We had an interview with Trump. They were, for sure. But obviously he sold it whenever he ran for president. But so Miss USA is owned by Miss Universe. And then Miss America, it just stops at Miss America. To compete in Miss America, there is the talent portion. So that's where you see the singing and the baton twirling or whatever it may be, really talented girls. And then for Miss USA, I like to say we don't showcase those talents. We keep them under wraps, you know, we're just real humble like that. But there's no talent portion. So Miss USA is more model-like. They don't even really love the word pageant. They want it to be more of just a competition. Gotcha. I think a pageant girl has a bad reputation from years past, and kind of that overly stoic, robotic type, you know, Barbie doll type vibe. That's not what they want at all at Miss USA. Right. And opposed to Miss America, that is a little bit more traditional in that sense.
Sure.
Still a really great organization, but much more scholarship based and talent.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you were in Miss USA during the Trump years. Did you have interactions with him?
Yes, we had it. We did a short little interview with him.
And how was that? Do you have any comments? Do you have any comments on our former president, Maria?
Yeah, I definitely do. Honestly, it was totally fine. He was actually kind of funny. He walked into, so we were all on stage at that point. And we were wearing like our opening number outfits. We had just finished our rehearsal for that day, which there's a lot of. At that point, Miss USA was held in Las Vegas and it was 2.5 weeks long. So it was a marathon there. But he came in mid rehearsal, just kind of unexpectedly. And so we all just like made like a U shape on the stage. And then he went down and spoke with each of us. I was the first one, I think, to say thank you. Like, thanks for having us. Thanks for, you know, putting this on for us or whatnot. And I think that might have struck a chord with him because he talked to me for quite a while and he didn't talk to everybody. There's only a handful of us that he really did. Yeah. But right when he was walking to the auditorium, it was ready for the televised show. So you could see like the back of his head when he was walking down. And so he could see the back of his head on the big screens. And he actually said, he's like, see, look, my hair's not that bad or something like that. And it was pretty funny. So he kind of broke the ice that way. And he's a lot taller than I expected. He's definitely not a little guy. But yeah, it was fine. I mean, it was short and sweet. He didn't do anything inappropriate. My year and at Miss Universe too was, I think, the year all those rumors came out, and I didn't witness any of those, so I can't attest to that. So it was totally fine. It was just like talking to any other owner of an organization at that time.
Right. There's a lot of scrutiny over pageants, I think, whether they're relevant in today's world or not. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think the people that think they're not relevant are people who don't understand what pageants are about. So, I mean, they are about encouraging girls and helping girls that have so many kind of different aspirations find their place and to use those aspirations for good. Like I said, growing up in my small town, it was great, but there was, I just, like I cheered growing up, but I think I like cheerleading because of the performance aspect.
Yeah.
And but at my school, if you were in drama club or if you were in band, like you weren't cool. And it's just so unfortunate because then you grow up and oh, those are the actors and musicians that are the coolest of the cool. And so it's just not really fair. And so to me, pageants were kind of my outlet to find those girls that were that had similar interests and dreams that I did, that I couldn't find that common ground with people that went to my high school. As sure. supportive as a lot of those people were at my school, it was just something that, you know, God didn't put that dream in their head like it did, right. like he did for me. And so for that, just for helping girls find their way and their purpose, it's unreal, like how yeah. good that can do, how great that change can be for a girl. But then also the girls that truly never ever win, but just compete and practice and all that stuff, even if without a single win, the amount of confidence they gain and just self-awareness they grow, and just I mean from little things, like I remember being in high school too when I one of my best friends, she'd never won it at a basketball game. She didn't want to walk across the court to go to the concession stand. She wanted to go back out of the hallway and behind, you know, the bleachers. And I was right. like, what's wrong with that? And it's just like that. And I really attest that to pageantry because I was used to being on stage. Yeah. I'm used to talking to crowds. And even though those goals for sure, those skills help in pageantry, more so they help outside of pageantry. And that's always my goal when I'm helping girls through the coaching process too, is to help them gain those skills that will far outweigh the pageant stage. And if yeah. they win or they don't win. But truly, I would welcomely challenge anyone who thinks that they're not relevant to really see the good that these girls are doing. And the charitable aspects of that they do, they don't need a crown to do, but once you have one, it sure does, you know, open a lot of ears.
Sure.
I remember going to elementary schools to speak, and I would walk in and they would look at me like I was any other teacher. They wouldn't, you know, the kids wouldn't think twice, but the second I put a shiny thing on my head, all of a sudden, you know, their ears perk up and they have all eyes locked in and they want to hear everything you have to say. And sometimes I think that's really what the crown and sash is for, is to get their attention. And then you can do the good with it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think those people that, that scrutinize pageants, that, well, I think one of the most common things you hear from these people is the swimsuit portion of a pageant necessary? Is it necessary?
Yeah. And that's a good question. And it depends. It depends on your goal. And I totally see both sides of that. So Miss America a few years ago took away the swimsuit competition.
Right.
Miss USA, of course, still has it. And there's a lot of ways for, like you said, like for like the charitable side of things, of course, that's not needed, not in the slightest. But I do know a lot of very traditional pageant girls who are after it for the scholarship money and or the ability to make a difference in their community. Mm-hmm. Once the swimsuit was taken away, they no longer wanted to compete because that's the most fun competition, even for those that maybe don't feel like $1 million. It's upbeat and it's fun. It's a fun walk. And even those that previously don't love their body, I've had girls come to me and say like how confident and empowering it was to do that on stage.
Yeah.
And you're faking it till you make it. And then so once you kind of put, you had to put yourself in that really odd, awkward situation.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times the confidence grows. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be necessary. There's tons of organizations that don't have it and tons that have fitness now instead, where it's leggings and a top and they do a routine or they just do a walk, either way. And that is really, really a strong spot too, because at the end of the day, it's not like they're taking your measurements and you have to fit into a certain mold to excel in a swimsuit competition, but yet it's instead, do you take care of yourself? Because regardless, at the end of the day, how can you make a difference and represent your state, your country, your county, whatever it may be, if you're not taking care of yourself? And that goes on the mental scale as well as the physical scale, but it's not so much, I think as long as the judges are instructed and educated that it's not about being as skinny as possible, instead it's being confident and fit.
Yeah.
And that's key. And that's when it's acceptable to have swimsuit.
I think one of the biggest hot button topics that's out there right now, which we're seeing in athletics a lot, and I'm curious mm-hmm. if it's going to happen with pageants, the LGBTQ community. Are we going mm-hmm. to see trans contestants in these pageants? Is that going to be allowed? Or is that happening now?
We already have. Yeah. So last year, Miss Nevada was the first trans contestant in Miss USA, at least. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, she identifies as a girl. I don't really know the scientific level of those changes, but she definitely did do really well, and she was gorgeous. And it has completely for sure come into the pageant world. And there are people that feel one way or the other about that by all means, but regardless of how they feel, it definitely is happening.
Why do you think there aren't male pageants?
Well, there are a couple.
Are there a couple?
Well, yeah, but there a lot of them are more like bodybuilder style.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I think like Mr. Kentucky is technically like a bodybuilder competition.
Right. I remember Mr. Kentucky.
Yeah. But there are some, when it comes to like drag race, you know, drag queen type stuff, mm-hmm. I think they have some, but they're not as, you know, organized by any means. I think it's more of a show than a competition, from my knowledge. But like I said, I am far from a pro at that in that world. But it is, I know something like that does exist. But I have been asked that question before from guys that want to compete.
What does a Miss Kentucky do through the rest of the year when they have the reign?
Yeah. So a lot of times it's kind of up to the girl and what she wants to focus on. So a lot of them make a defined platform that they want to devote their year to. So whether that be like, I've seen girls make a platform of like ovarian cancer, or some are just general cancers, or some are helping kids read. It could be as vast and vague, or it can be as specific as possible, as they want it to be. So it's kind of whatever is in the girl's heart. And then, so a lot of times they go and they, whether they create events or they attend events relevant to that cause, but regardless of their specific platform, it is almost always happening. I guess it's almost not, I don't want to say mandatory, but it almost always happens that they will attend several schools to speak. And so whether that be speaking about confidence or again about their platform, especially if it relates to kids, or just simply reading a book, but just being able to be there and a different adult to walk in the room and to get questions, is typically what happens. My year was super, super busy. And I think a lot of that has to do with being from Danville, because being from Danville, everyone knows someone who knows someone who wanted me to come, and me winning for that small town was a big deal because, you know, everyone kind of knew everybody, opposed to when you're from a big city and you win, people don't know quite as easy. But long story short, pretty much anything charitable. But then of course there's also the fun. There's going to Millionaire's Row at the Kentucky Derby. And like the current Miss USA has gone to a lot of like movie premieres and things like that, in addition to working with Smile Train, who's an organization that works with Club Balance. And the specific platform of Miss USA is breast and ovarian cancer awareness. So they work a lot with Susan G. Komen. So it's pretty much just to make a difference, but it's also to have fun. I mean, those girls have a blast and they get a lot of opportunities and open doors.
And you went to college, right?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about when did your education plug into all this? It seems you were pretty busy with pageants and modeling and the things you're getting into. Tell me about your education.
I went straight to college. I went right out of high school, of course. And I graduated from Eastern Kentucky University for my undergrad. And I was Miss Kentucky my sophomore year. Gotcha. So honestly, I missed a lot of that year, a whole lot. And my professors were just really understanding and actually incredibly supportive. And even before I went to Miss USA, which was held in April, I finished the semester early. Like I did what it took. And I think as long as you're willing to take that responsibility, you can definitely still stay in school. There are a lot of girls, however, that do take a year off, but I was in a program. I went to school for speech language pathology, actually. And I knew if I took a year out of that program, it would really set me back and I'd be in a different group and all that stuff. So I did finish that. I started modeling professionally my junior year. And so again, was missing a lot of class. A lot of it I was able to do somewhat online. Now I think it's so much less of an issue because how comfortable people are with online schooling now. Right. But then I actually have my master's as well from Western Kentucky University, but I did do that fully online. I was actually living in Miami modeling at that point.
Sure.
And so I just knew that it was something that I wanted to finish, and I'm so glad I did. Although now it's not the field I'm working in by any means, but I'm just, like I said before, I'm a determined person and far from a quitter. So if I had started, I definitely want it to finish by all means.
Right. Well, you know, you are a busy person. So like today you're actively modeling still, acting, hosting, you've been in music videos, so much stuff. Like you probably list a dozen things I see you doing.
Thank you.
You're mentoring people. Let's talk about that. Where's your life now? Like let's encapsulate all the cool stuff you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. It's sometimes it just seems like work to me, so I appreciate you thinking that it's cool. So I am living back in Kentucky, which is where I definitely want to be. I want to still be able to travel each week as I do, but I like to at least have this as home base, and it's where all my family is, so it's nice to be here. Yeah. But so during the week, my agents book me for different jobs. So most of those agency jobs are modeling jobs. And so I will go wherever in the country usually to complete those jobs. A lot of those are repetitive clients of mine, and some of them are just one-time clients. So I think from the outside looking in, it sounds a lot scarier, but to me, it's just like clocking into work. I go there, I have my coworkers, it's the same makeup people, it's the same hair people, you know, same studio. So it works out. But since moving back to Kentucky, I have developed a lot of clients here as well, but that's more so on the TV side of things. Yeah. So I have several clients that have me in on monthly retainers to create content for them. Some just want social media content. Some want TV commercials. Some do billboards and photos, whatnot, but just simply to have either a spokesperson or a model for their brand. I'm able to bring that here as well. And then I do some TV work, of course, on the national level as well. That's not so much on a monthly basis, but just simply booked either directly or through my agencies. And sure. Then, yes, you asked about the mentoring part. So while being here, especially during COVID, I kept having girls ask for help to get into pageantry or modeling or TV. And it was something I did on a very small scale before, but COVID ironically helped that. I think just because I was here so much more and I was able to be more consistent with helping girls. And so that has grown a lot. And so that's to help with interview skills, public speaking, walking, stage, or some are just aspiring models and they want help getting connected with an agency. So I do all of that to help girls like me who didn't have someone to relate to or someone to kind of guide them. I try to be that sure. person for them.
But you've stopped short of having your own agency.
Yes. I mean, you know, life's not over. You never know. But right now I might have my own agency for sure, but who knows? We'll see.
So, you know, one of the things I want to talk about is, I think, you know, there's certainly an ugly side of the entertainment business for sure. In the pageant world, modeling industry, you know, film and television, there's certainly scoundrels that are out there.
Yeah.
How do you avoid these pitfalls? Obviously, you didn't really run into much of this, but I mean, people have eating disorders, they have drug problems, they're sexual. Yeah. There's a million things that could go wrong in these businesses. How do you navigate that? Yeah. How do you keep out of it? How did you keep yourself where you're at now?
That's a great question. And that was definitely something that was harder when I first started, because that's when you're kind of establishing who you are to these people. And I think the first step I always recommend to girls is to be honest with your agents of who you are, what you stand for, what you will and what you won't do. Most agents will ask those questions and still book you anyways. Usually if they're really pushy, it's a shady agent and it's not a real agency, because a lot of the modeling I do, I call it girl next door. It's technically commercial modeling. So it's, you know, a lot of beauty brands. I've modeled for like Pantene, Maybelline, do brands like Jockey, or I've worked for Kohl's a lot, JCPenney, things like that, as well as some higher end brands too. But a lot of those aren't really, they're not going to ask you to do anything crazy. It's usually the photographers that are helping you for your portfolio shoots that try to push the limit. And especially now, I've got no problem just flat out saying no to someone. But when you are starting, it's really, really difficult. So I just always try to remind girls and to be that example, like you can do this for a living and not do anything that you're uncomfortable with. And if someone pushes you to do that, they're not in the right mind. And as far as things beyond that go too, just simply knowing who you are. And I always kind of saw it as being the light in a dark industry. So I welcomed the questions. I've had tons of Jesus talk conversations in the makeup chair with artists who grew up. There's one specifically that I just adore. And he is a very flamboyantly gay guy who has a heart of gold, but grew up Mormon. And so when he decided to take that path in life, his family shunned him. And that's what he associated religion to be, really. And so even anyone, even of the, you know, Christian faith or of any walk, that's what he associated. So I always welcome the conversation with him. And more than once did I get told from an artist that, oh, you don't seem like a typical Christian. And these are people that live in, you know, Chicago, New York, Miami, et cetera, sure. who want the Bible Belt and who don't really have those examples. So I welcomed the opportunity to be different. It wasn't always easy, don't get me wrong, but it at the same time is, I think if you look at it as an opportunity instead of a downfall, that was helpful. And then I always just felt like, you know, to whom much is given, much is, you know, expected. And so I try to keep that in mind too, and know that I had been blessed and I wanted to use my blessings to work in this really cool industry for good.
Do you have any horror stories from a set?
You know, someone asked me that the other day. I really don't. I mean, I had a couple. I've had definitely a few freaky photographers, little creepsters.
Guy with camera.
For sure. I've had that. I tried to push the envelope, but nothing really terrible, honestly. But again, I think that's because my agents knew me. They knew they're not going to send me to a shady job. And being with a legit agency also means they're weeding out the weirdos. So I think that's really how it was built.
Yeah. You know, and to be fair, I think a lot of agencies are just as bad as the guy with camera, because agencies really, I see all too many times these bloated rosters of hundreds and hundreds of names. You know, the agencies I'm talking about, hundreds and hundreds of people. They'll take anyone and put them on a list. And it's just about churning cattle through, you know, it's just about percentages. Let's get them jobs, get our percentage.
Yes.
They care nothing beyond that. And I feel that that's a terrible, the agency system is a terrible system generally.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, if you're not lucky enough to be represented in New York or Chicago or LA with legitimate big industries, which this stuff still happens there too, you know, you get whatever the best there is in Boise, Idaho, you know, or Alabama or Iowa, you know, whatever, you know, person's put together their agency and their daughter gets all the first jobs, and then whatever's left, they parcel out to other people.
You're exactly right. Yeah, that definitely happens.
So I think the agency system is bad, but what I want to get into is also kind of the side on the individual. Like what has to happen for people to develop their eating disorders? Are people telling them you need to lose weight? Are the girls just, I've got to stay thin so I can do this? Like, what have you seen in your experience? Yeah. How do you keep people in order that way?
Yeah. Actually, my roommate who I lived with for a while between different cities, she suffered for a while with that. And I think she would tell that story herself. And I think it's really a case by case basis, because you can have one agent tell some girl that she needs to lose 2 inches in her hips, and then she say, you know, forget you, I'm out. And then you'll have the same agent say the same thing to another girl, and she'll develop the eating disorder. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times the key to that is to think about, like, knowing who you are first, right? And what you stand for, and that you are worthy and you are more. And then also being a clean judge of who is telling you this. Is this even a legit agent at all? And then also know, like, I mean, I've heard literally everything under the sun that someone could say to me. And I think a lot of times, if it's coming from a valuable source, then to think about, they are on my side. Like, they want the commission they will make for booking me. And so it may be something to consider, but it's not something to develop an eating disorder over. And a lot of, like I said, my agents I've worked with over the years have just been so great. And if I ever told them that I was struggling in that way, they, you know, would let me take a big pause in working at all, because that's not what they want for us. But they do want you to be able to fit the clothes when you show up. But I do think overall, I mean, the eating disorders are definitely still a prevalent issue, and it's a really sad struggle. But I am happy to see the modeling industry starting to be much more accepting. And I think a lot of that has to do with having social media marketing, because they're showing that they're accepting people of different ranges and body types and heights and sizes. Yeah. And that's trickling down to the modeling world to see that, in fact, they want that variety. But a lot of times girls obsess over being so small, when in reality, the agent just needs to know what size you are. I was on a job a couple weeks ago, and a girl showed up and she was truly double the size that she had told them. And so the clothes they pulled for her, they simply didn't fit. It wasn't that she was wrong. It's just now the whole day was wasted because I had no clothes for her. And so I think you just have to see what the motive is and why they're asking and who they are. And I try to have a level mind at it, but it's some people just simply struggle more than others.
You know, the modeling industry, you changed substantially. When I was younger, you know, it wasn't uncommon to get the Sunday paper and there was an ad for a Bacon's or a JCPenney, and there were local models in those, you know, and you'd see your friends you were in high school with. And then that sort of went away. And it became these pre-programmed, pre-packaged ads that came from the coast. And that all that good, legitimate marketing went away. And for a quite a period of time, it was the, you know, bowling alley runway shows and like stupid stuff that was going on. And there wasn't a lot of good work for people to get. And it became, you know, spokesmodel work and other things. And then I think maybe this has changed a great deal because of social media. And maybe we're seeing a swing back in a different direction. Do you agree with that?
I do on most side. I really don't remember the times of like having local people in those ads,
Yeah,
but
I'm
I
much
remember.
older than you.
That's okay. What I'm saying is, I was part of the people that were doing the national ads, but yet those are simply gone is the change that I've really seen. So kind of right on par with what you were saying that, we used to go and I'd have one shot and then I'd fly into wherever for one shot. And that would be like the circular, as they called it, or catalog that would go into the newspaper or be mailed out in full catalog form. And now everything is just e-commerce. And so those special shoots definitely still happen, but not near as often because everyone's just doing e-com. And so in those days, they pay significantly less. And you really just come on set and it's like front, side, back, change to the next outfit. And then shoot front, shoot side, shoot back, and change. And that's, I mean, anytime you shop online, if you swipe through pictures, that's what we're doing. You'll see the models, from all angles or different colors. And it's one of those things that like if you don't if you're not willing to model for e-commerce, which is a lot harder and a lot longer day, then you kind of, in my opinion, most people can't continue a full-time modeling career without doing e-com because it is such a great part of the industry. But it of course is not near as creative or fun as the days of catalog when you could kind of play a character more like it instead of playing a mannequin. So it's to all models that I know that have been here for a while that no one loves that change, but it's just the reality of social media and marketing and everything being online now. Nothing's really in print. So yeah.
So as we get close to wrapping up this interview, just a couple quick final things. What's your daily self-care routine?
It's a great question. I'm maybe not the best example of this at all.
Well, I ask a lot of people this question, so I want to hear yours, because if you're doing
Okay.
something wrong, it's awfully right.
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I gotta be honest, I am far from the person that gets a good amount of sleep. I will cram way too much into each day, from sun up to sundown, and then beat myself up about it if I don't get things accomplished. It's kind of more of my struggle, more than like you said, like I don't really have eating disorder issues, but I've got the busyness issues, which isn't healthy either. But I think it kind of streams from the fact that I don't ever know my schedule in advance. And so if I have a day of productivity, I think I don't know when the next one will be. But I think
What's
it just simply
your
depends.
average on sleep? How much do you think you get?
Oh, 5 hours?
Really? Wow. Okay. How much do you drink water? Do you stay hydrated?
Yes, no, I definitely stay hydrated. And as far as like true self-care, I mean, I really try to prioritize always making time to get in the gym. When I don't feel like myself. I do need more sleep, but simply trying to do that and find the time to be down. Like for me, that might be when I'm driving or when I'm flying or something like that. Like I purposely will sometimes not get internet on a plane so that I can't be productive. So I try to definitely manage those. But yeah, I am far from the self-care model to follow, probably,
Tell
honestly.
me
I really have tried to be better.
how you eat. Are you vegetarian? You meat eater? What are you?
Yeah, I am a Southern eater all the way. yeah, definitely not a vegetarian. I do try to really prioritize protein, and that's another thing. I guess that's considered self-care too. I try to just eat the whole foods, but for the most part, I am on the go a lot, so I definitely live off some protein bars here and there. But I
Supplements?
try
Take
to,
vitamins?
yeah. Oh yeah, all of them. I mean, pretty much everything under the sun that you can take. Yes, I do. But anything, hair, skin, nails, and then just simply like just to be clean. I try to just eat as clean as possible. And but lots of protein. I'm not afraid of carbs. I just try to keep them whole grain and earlier in the day. I had my training from Miss USA taught me that, and that's something I've kind of never strayed from. But and I also just self-care wise, I'm really become a little bit of a social butterfly. And so to me, that's, you know, to be with my friends. And at the end of the day, I love what I do. So it's not like I'm clocking in and miserable. Sure. Since a young age, mom was always like, you can say no. But to me, I'm like, I really want to say yes. So I'm just very grateful. I do enjoy what I do, but I could definitely prioritize sleep more.
What about mental health or spiritual health? Do you make time to meditate, prayer?
Yes, absolutely. I do. I'm one of those people that can't really go to bed without doing that. Thankfully, I'm glad I kind of have that little alarm in my head that goes off. So I do always try to fit that in. And even if, let's say I'm traveling for the week and can't go to a physical church on Sunday, which is common. Thankfully my church is online and also has a podcast. And so even if my church time or prayer time, meditation time is in, like I said, in the car driving, it still counts to me. And I feel the void when I don't do it.
For sure. Last question. What's your guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure. Oh, I ask the girls this for interview practice, but I haven't really thought about it myself for a while. Okay. Well, food wise, this sounds really stupid to a lot of people, but I love peanut butter, like right out of the jar.
The same thing. Dude, like 2 o'clock in the morning.
I will travel with it. It's a great on the go when I don't have time to actually like sit down for a meal yet. So that, and then I do think kind of the busyness. I love what I do, and I always want to be busy. I get kind of anxious when I'm still. Today was a slower day than normal for me, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do. Like, what can I get done? Like, well, am I busy? You know, my list. Like, I gotta find my massive to-do list and tackle something today. Instead of just being like, hey, it's a pretty fall day, let's go for a walk. So that's definitely a guilty pleasure because I like what I do, but it's not healthy.
Sure. You mentioned nature. Is nature part of your daily self-care? Do you try to get outside, get some sun?
I do. I am really reliant on sunshine. I learned that at Miss USA because you're competing and having rehearsals in the casinos where there's not windows. And we were often up before sunrise and, you know, we're staying out once it sets. And so we're in rooms with no windows. And I remember one day we finally went out for dinner or something during the rehearsal week, and I saw all the sun and I was just like revitalized. And so I definitely have to make time to be outside. I love kayaking. I love hiking. Anything like that where I'm forced to be away from technology, away from my emails, away from social media is something I really, really strive for.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Maria, I really appreciate you doing this today. And how can people find you out there on the interwebs?
Yeah, thanks. On Instagram, where what I use the most, it's just at Maria Montgomery, MariaMontgomery. On Twitter, I'm on there as well, and Facebook too, or just mariamontgomery.com.
No TikTok yet, huh?
I do have TikTok.
Do you? Sorry.
Yes, I don't use it. I should use it. I'm too old, I guess. But yeah. No, but I do. TikTok's a lot of fun. I just am an Instagram girl at heart for sure.
Yeah, well, it's one of the best for sure. But yeah. Hey, thanks for coming out, and let's stay in touch, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
Hi, I'm Father Daniel DePlantis, a Catholic priest, martial artist, and host of the Karate Priest podcast. Have you ever wondered what the church teaches about different topics? Are you a martial arts enthusiast or just someone who wants to learn more about martial arts? I'd like to invite you to join me and many guests on my podcast as we cover topics of faith, everyday living, and martial arts on the Karate Priest podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and Anthony Smith and is distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure and visit the official website for Metacortex Publishing at metacortexpublishing.com or find us on social media for other unique content.